The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off today with the Who Knew article. Facts left out of history. And there's a picture of, I'm terrible, I can't remember the name, of the black lady who broke the bus barrier in Selma, Alabama, sitting in the back of the bus, sitting in the white section of the bus, and a white gentleman behind her, basically reading a book nonchalantly. Very interesting. Sometimes the most interesting information gets lost on the cutting room floor of time. Oh, it was Rosa Parks. Was not the first woman to defy racist bus laws. In 1955, a young woman in Montgomery, Alabama, caused a stir when she refused to give her bus seat to a white passenger. She was the first person arrested for protesting Montgomery racist busing rule, and her defiance eventually became the subject of international attention. That woman was named Claudette Colvin. Actually, she was just a girl, 15 years old. Of course, it is Rosa Parks above, and that's the picture I spoke of, who went down in history for defying the Jim Crow laws in the same way later that year. For the record, it's a popular misconception that both women were arrested for sitting in whites-only sections. Colvin knew Parks from NAACP Youth Group, and she also knew that Parks was the better person to be a figurehead in their city's growing protest movement. Parks had done prior work with the NAACP, and the organization didn't want a teenager in the role, Colvin explains. After decades of obscurity, Colvin eventually received the praise she deserved for her unsung heroism in Montgomery. Although she may not hold a prominent place as Parks in textbooks, she has no regrets over her protest. I feel very, very proud of what I did, she says. Number two, Christopher Columbus thought the earth was shaped like a pear. Yes, Columbus believed the world was round, as did sailors and mathematicians going back to ancient Greece. However, he did not think the earth was a perfect sphere, and that likely was because of a very famous poem. According to the logbook for his third voyage to the Americas, Columbus suspected the world was in the form of a pear, and its highest peak had the biblical Garden of Eden on its summit. This is precisely how earth was described by Dante Alighieri in his epic poem, The Divine Comedy, the most influential work of Italian literature and history. Dante placed the Garden of Eden atop an impossibly high mountain surrounded by an ocean, which Columbus incorrectly determined to be in present-day Venezuela. Number three, a girl's fake testimony helped push the United States into the Gulf War. In 1990, a representative from the Kuwaiti-sponsored Citizen for a Free Kuwait hired New York public relations firm Hill plus Nolan to help persuade the American government to join a war against Iraq. After a few months and $12 million in research money, the group found a 15-year-old Kuwaiti girl named Nahaya, and there's a picture of her, she's a pretty girl, to deliver a horrifying testimony to the Congressional Human Rights Caucus about hospitals being looted and premature babies being left to die. Amnesty International corroborated Nahaya's testimony, which quickly became a talking point for U.S. senators and President George H.W. Bush during the buildup to the Gulf War. In 1992, after the Americans had crushed the Iraqis in a mere 42 days of combat, an op-ed in the New York Times revealed that Nahaya was actually the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to the United States. Her entire testimony was dismissed as false, and Hill plus Nolan's role in the PR move was made public. Alexander Graham Bell did not invent the telephone, number four. In 1860, a Florentine immigrant in New York named Antonio Meucci demonstrated a remarkable invention he called a teltrofono. Sadly, Meucci could not find a sponsor for his product, and after several mishaps, he could not afford the fee for even a temporary patent. Enter Alexander Graham Bell, who just so happened to share a laboratory with Meucci. Bell didn't get the patent for his telephone until 1876, 16 years after Meucci had unveiled the prototype. Bell soon struck a deal with Western Union to sell his device. Meucci sued Bell for fraud, and the case was nearing the Supreme Court when Meucci died in 1889. It took until 2002 for the Italian inventor to be vindicated. That was when the U.S. House of Representatives passed a resolution declaring that his work and the invention of the telephone should be acknowledged. Number 5. And Charles Lindbergh was not the first to fly across the Atlantic. Lindbergh became an international hero when he flew nonstop from Long Island to Paris in 1927. It was the first time anyone had attempted such a feat. If you overlook John Hancock and Arthur Witten Bowen, two British pilots who flew from Newfoundland to Ireland in 1919. So while Lindbergh deserves credit for completing the world's first solo trip, Alcock and Brown were the first to fly across the ocean, along the way surviving what sounds like an action movie, rain, a snowstorm, fog, and ice. At one point, they nearly spiraled into the sea. "We had a terrible journey," Alcock said after more than 16 hours battling the elements. The pilots landed in a bog in Ireland. A few days later, King George V knighted them. Landing a man on the moon wasn't all that popular. Number 6. The moon landing may be fondly remembered as one of the greatest achievements in human history, particularly by those who witnessed it on television. However, opinion polls taken in the 1960s and 70s found that everyday Americans were far from universally enamored of the space race. Shortly after the Apollo 11 mission was completed in July 1969, only 53% of Americans believed that the moon landing was worth the tax dollars invested. According to Forbes, the Apollo program cost about $25 billion, or about $150 billion adjusted for inflation. 10 years later, another poll found that only 41% of Americans felt the benefits of the space program ultimately outweighed its cost. Number 7. Many future celebrities fought in World War II, and I'm a little familiar with this one. B. Arthur joined the U.S. Marine Corps, that's Maud in case you don't recognize the name, joined the U.S. Marine Corps Women's Reserve in 1943 before heading to Broadway and Maud. Future New York Yankees Yogi Berra saw action on Omo and Utah beaches on D-Day. Comedian Mel Brooks fought in the Battle of the Bulge. Jimmy Stewart was promoted from private to colonel and eventually became a brigadier general in the U.S. Air Force. Clark Gable flew 5 combat missions in a B-17. Swagged after David Niven was already well known when he took a break from acting to become a commando in the British Army. Peter Sellers was in the Royal Air Force before graduating to the Pink Panther. Audrey Hepburn was a teenage volunteer in the Dutch Resistance. Lee Marvin served as a Marine and was wounded in the Battle of Saipan. Tony Curtis witnessed Japan's surrender on September 2, 1945. And Julia Child had a top-secret post in the Office of Strategic Services. She even assisted researchers trying to develop a shark repellent that would keep sailors from becoming an underwater meal. Number 8. The 4th of July should be on July 2nd, or maybe even August 2nd. On July 3, 1776, John Adams sent his wife exciting news. The Second Continental Congress had approved a resolution for American independence. It was such a historic moment that Adams wrote, "The second day of July, 1776, will be celebrated by succeeding generations as a great anniversary festival, complete with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illuminations from one end of this continent to the other." The adoption of what we call the Lee Resolution on July 2, 1776, marked the moment the 13 colonies were effectively independent from Great Britain. After a short wait while the Declaration of Independence was written on parchment by Timothy Matlock, a Pennsylvania clerk renowned for his good handwriting, John Hancock and his followers signed it on August 2, 1776, a full month after John Adams inaccurately predicted July 2nd would be as celebrated as the 4th of July is today. So what's July 4th got to recommend it? It was actually the day that Continental Congress finally agreed on and approved the famous language of the Declaration. And in other words, the 4th of July is really a celebration of unity. Number 9. The War of the Worlds panic was more like a skirmish. On October 31, 1938, the New York Times ran a front-page story headlined, "Radio Listeners in Panic. Many flee homes to escape gas raid from Mars." The culprit, 23-year-old Orson Welles, who several hours early had read a radio adaptation of A.G. Wells' The War of the Worlds with his fellow actors. Was there panic in the streets? No. According to a national survey conducted on the evening of the broadcast, only 2% of the participants had listened to Wells' War of the Worlds production. The other 98% likely had no idea what he was up to and learned about it later. While some of that 2% might have thought the country had been invaded, they were probably few in number, and more afraid of a war with Germany than with Martians. However, the idea of a science fiction broadcast causing panic was a trick or treat too delicious for newspapers to resist that Halloween. Number 10. Some women suffrage leaders wanted only white women to vote. Well, that's pretty much common knowledge now. This year marks the 100th anniversary of women winning their rights to vote. But the victory wasn't as sweet as we'd like to think. Some of those at the forefront of the suffrage movement, fearful that questions of race would make their battle more difficult, wanted to advocate for white women alone. Elizabeth Cady Stanton, arguably the leading voice for women's rights, along with Susan B. Anthony, occasionally delved into what biography Laurie Ginzenberg described as ugly, racist rhetoric that prioritized educated, virtuous white women over black men and women. Sojourner Truth, the former slave who was also leading voice for women's rights, ultimately broke with Stanton over her refusal to agree that women of every color deserved the right to vote. Even after the 19th Amendment was ratified in 1920, poll taxes and other obstacles barred African-American women and men from voting throughout the South. It was not until the passage of the 24th Amendment and the Civil Rights Act of 1964 that millions of African-Americans finally were able to exercise the voting rights previously denied to them. Number 11. The Founding Fathers embraced Islam. George Washington invited Muslims to work at his home. John Adams praised Muhammad as one of history's greatest inquirers after truth, alongside Socrates and Confucius. Thomas Jefferson taught himself Arabic using a Koran and even hosted an iftar dinner at the White House during the Ramadan. Why was there such openness to Islam in the early United States? One reason, Morocco's Sultan Muhammad III was the first head of state to formally recognize the 13 colonies' independence from Great Britain. In December 1777, following the Revolutionary War, Jefferson, Adams, and the Sultan signed the U.S.-Morocco Treaty of Peace and Friendship. In 1786, after more than 230 years of conflict and crises, it remains the longest unbroken treaty in U.S. history. Now, that's an interesting fact. Number 12. Joe McCarthy also chickened out on giving the speech that made him famous. The 1950 Lincoln Day dinner in Wheeling, West Virginia, was where little-known Senator Joseph McCarthy lobbed one of the most meteoric political bombshells in the 20th century. Sorry, I'm having a little tongue problems today. My apologies. I have here in my hand a list of 205, McCarthy told the assembly Republican power brokers, a list of names that were made known to the Secretary of State as being members of the Communist Party, and who nevertheless are still working and shaping policy in the State Department. It was a brazen lie, delivered by McCarthy with the supreme confidence that the world would turn his name into an anism and crush the careers of hundreds of Americans. Yet as Larry Tye writes in his new book, Demagogue, McCarthy wasn't as nearly as gutsy as he appeared. The senator had a second peach in his pocket that day, a snoozer about national housing policy, which was his real pet cause. But the red-baiting barn burner seemed more likely to grab the limelight, so why not? And when it put him on the front page of newspapers, there was no turning back. Number 13. Abraham Lincoln was one macho guy. Remember Lincoln for being tall and gangly, cerebral and honest. But before he entered the White House, he was a real he-man. He was a skilled wrestler in his youth who would occasionally referee other fights, including cockfights. When he was challenged to a duel in 1842, Lincoln requested broadswords so he could intimidate his notably shorter opponent with his reach. His foe agreed to a truce after Abe sliced a tree branch above the man's head. Lincoln was fearless in political battle, too. When a fight broke out at a campaign event, he reportedly picked up one of the offenders by the neck and the seat of his trousers and threw him 12 feet away. Go, Abe! Number 14. Eleanor Roosevelt was a target of the FBI. We think of the Roosevelts as a beloved First Lady who helped lift the nation's spirits through the Great Depression and World War II, an ardent defender of human rights and a delegate to the United Nations. So why did the FBI spy on her for 40 years, compiling a file of more than 3,200 pages? Despite her reputation today as a transformative First Lady, Roosevelt's power earned her all sorts of enemies, not the least political opponents of FDR, J. Edgar Hoover, the most omnipotent director of the FBI, was especially troubled by Mr. Roosevelt's embrace of liberal causes and civil rights activists, many of whom he suspected were communists. The public didn't find out about the extraordinary record that the FBI kept on the First Lady until 1982. To this day, 12 pages of the file are classified. Big fish in a small pond. The mayor from Jaws is still the mayor of Jaws 2. It is so important to vote in your local elections. That's kind of weird. Laughter, the best medicine. A kindergarten teacher was telling her students about different kinds of animals. Whales are the largest, she said, but they cannot swallow people because their throats are too small. But in the Bible it says that Jonah was swallowed by a whale, said little girl. You can't always believe what you read, the teacher replied. Well, when I go to heaven, said the little girl, I'll ask Jonah. And what if Jonah didn't go to heaven? Then you can ask him. It's such a poor planning that the ninja doesn't have at least one silent letter. That's true. Considering ninjas are supposed to sneak. What does a dyslexic, agnostic, insomniac do at night? He stays up wondering if there really is a dog. I was in a job interview today. The interviewer handed me his laptop and said, I want you to try to sell this to me. So I put it under my arm, walked out of the building, and went home. Eventually he called and demanded, bring it back here right now. I said, $300 and it's yours. Market fresh. Did you hear how they caught the great produce bandit? He stopped to take a leak, L-E-E-K. A vegan said to me, people who sell meat are gross. I said, people who sell fruit and veg are grocers. A pigeon was anxiously piercing up and down the street when he saw his friend hop up on the curb. Where have you been, he asked. I've been waiting here for hours. Sorry I'm late, the friend replied. It was such a nice day, I thought I'd walk. Health and medicine. The promise of CBD. After only a few years on the market, CBD is being hailed as a new miracle cure-all. Does it work? How? Four people share their experience. And there's a picture of a woman, looks like she's probably in her maybe 50s, standing outside on a field with her foot up on a rock and pointed, staring off into the distance. She's got one arm crooked on her hip and the other arm on her knee. I'm sorry, she's 65. I called that one wrong. Lori Maxson, 65, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Retired school administrator, conditioned rheumatoid arthritis. That can be a lot of us. About 4 years ago, Lori Maxson began to find it challenging to complete simple tasks in the morning. I started to experience a lot of pain in my hands and feet and difficulty moving my fingers, says Mason, a retired school administrator from Colorado Springs, Colorado. I couldn't even grip a toothbrush or hairbrush. Her doctor gave her a physical and ordered blood test. Soon Maxson received a diagnosis. My numbers indicated that I had a moderate to severe case of rheumatoid arthritis, she says. An autoimmune disorder, rheumatoid arthritis causes painful inflammation in the lining of the joints. It can often take sufferers multiple tries to find the right treatment. Maxson started a series of medications but couldn't tolerate the side effects, which included extreme fatigue, nausea, and itching. She finally found relief with monthly infusions of a biologic medication that blocks inflammation causing substances. Then she decided to set her sights higher. I was good, she says, but I wanted to be even better. She changed her diet, cutting back on sugar, eating more plant-based foods and less red meat, and choosing organic fruits and vegetables at the market. Though websites and blogs where patients shared their arthritis experiences, Maxson also found several people who had been helped by using CBD. CBD, which is short for cannabidiol, is a compound extracted from hemp plants, a type of cannabis. Yes, this is the same plant as marijuana, but unlike tetracarbocannabinol, THC, the compound that makes it pot psychoactive, CBD won't make you high and it isn't addictive. In 2018, Congress passed a bill that defined cannabis as hemp, not marijuana, as long as the plant contains no more than 0.3% of THC. This effectively made hemp-based products such as CBD legal. Because cannabis remains classified by the federal government as a controlled substance, though research on the benefits of CBD is just getting started, scientists do know, however, that CBD is a powerful anti-inflammatory. A 2017 animal study published in the journal Pain concluded that CBD could decrease joint inflammation and protect the nerves. Maxson decided to try a CBD tincture, a liquid extract she holds under her tongue until it is absorbed into the bloodstream, made from hemp plants grown locally. Today, after a year of taking CBD daily, Maxson says, I just feel like everything is working a little bit better and a little bit quicker. It's like oiling up a machine. Although she has had to give up the intense circuit training workouts she followed before her diagnosis, she's back to exercising again, taking Pilates classes several times a week and walking regularly. I realize that I have a chronic disease that affects my autoimmune system, Maxson says, and I'm doing everything I can to live the best life I can. It's a key piece of that. Laura Dobratz, 32, Minneapolis, Minnesota, paraprofessional at a middle school, insomnia and anxiety. And there's a picture of her. She's a fairly young lady, 32 years old, smiling, long brown hair, and wearing a sleeveless top. Lying awake every night, staring at the ceiling and counting sheep doesn't even begin to describe the agony of chronic insomnia. I would have trouble sleeping pretty much every single night for years, says Laura Dobratz. This meant I was always exhausted during the day and never felt well rested, which took a toll on every aspect of my life. Dobratz's insomnia began when her anxiety spiked during an extra stressful holiday season. It quickly turned into a vicious circle of worrying, which made her unable to relax enough to sleep. This led to more anxiety because she wasn't sleeping. Eventually, Dobratz sought out a psychiatrist. The doctor prescribed sleeping pills that helped her stay asleep, but she still had a rough time turning off the anxious part of her brain and falling asleep. So a psychiatrist recommended she try CBD. CBD works in part by mimicking and augmenting the effects of our own natural cannabinoids called endocannabinoids. Boy, that's a long word. Endocannabinoids, which acts on cells throughout the central nervous system and are believed to help maintain our internal equilibrium. The brain is loaded with cannabinoids receptors that enhance brain function and dial down stress and inflammation, explains Mary Clifton, a New York City-based internal medicine doctor and co-author of The Grass is Greener, Medical Marijuana, THC, and CBD Oil, and an advisory board member for the Zonulin CBD. CBD interacts with those and other receptors to calm your mind. Plus, CBD can help some people relieve anxiety, physical pain, and other issues that often contribute to insomnia. In a 2019 study, 80% of subjects reported significantly less anxiety, and 67% showed improved sleep scores after taking CBD. There are hundreds of different brands of CBD, and they are not all created equally. CBD is considered a supplement and is therefore unregulated. Anyone can get into the business, and there are a lot of so-called CBD producers with little or no actual cannabidiol in them, says Marge McKinney Mann, a researcher and product development manager for Blue Forest Farms, which grows high CBD scent hemp and sells CBD products. In addition to CBD and THC, cannabis plants contain hundreds of other compounds that may have additional effects. Among them are terpenes, aromatic molecules that promote relaxation, and cannabinol, CBN, which some people believe has a powerful sleep-promoting effect. Full-spectrum products contain all the compounds, including CBD, THC, CBN, terpenes, and others. This is always my first recommendation and has the entourage effect. All the compounds in a plant work best together, says Mann. If you live in a place where marijuana is not legal, opt for the broad-spectrum product in which just the THC has been removed. While pure CBD, also called CBD isolates, might sound like what you want, these products have had all other compounds removed and are generally less effective than full or broad-spectrum products. Dobratz opted for the broad-spectrum oil taken under the tongue. She has found that it has no lingering effects in the morning, unlike some sleeping medications. It costs $100 a bottle, but it's worth it because it works so well for me, she says. It helps me not worry continuously when I'm trying to go to sleep. I'm so glad my psychiatrist recommended it. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have tried it. Josh Kincaid, 43, home in Seattle, Washington. Occupation, health and wellness coordinator for an economic development agency. Conditions, chronic neck and back pain, migraines, and anxiety. And there's a picture of Josh. He is a reasonably aged man, I would say late 40s, maybe early 50s. He's got a mustache and a goatee. The goatee is partially brown, but mostly gray, and he has gray on the side and a receding hairline. Matter of fact, he kind of looks like me. Except he's skinny. I'm fat. Josh Kincaid registered for a charity race up the 98-flight Seattle Space Needle, but he worried that he might not be able to make it. He had suffered an injury on the job more than 20 years early and experienced severe neck and back pain ever since. But he applied a transdermal CBD patch to the base of his neck and was able to complete the race without a problem. "I don't think I could have done the stair climb without CBD," Kincaid says. "After taking CBD, I no longer have to take the opioids or muscle relaxers for chronic pain, nor the medication to stop the 8 hours of nausea I used to get from the migraines." Kincaid first tried CBD after he left a stressful job as a financial analyst to start a cannabis cafe, inspired by a high school friend who had just begun to use medicinal marijuana to treat his multiple sclerosis. The cafe served a coffee infused with CBD and THC, and Kincaid realized that not only helped ease his own physical pain, but also helped him overcome the extreme anxiety that used to prevent him from any public speaking. Today, he hosts a podcast about the business of cannabis and hemp. Kincaid also credits CBD with helping him deal with cravings when he changed his diet. Unlike THC, which is well known to cause hunger by activating certain cannabinoid receptors, CBD may trigger a molecular response that blocks them, these receptors, and refuses appetite and reduces appetite. A 2012 study also found that rats given CBD ate significantly less when offered food. CBD can be used in a wide array of different forms, from gummies to creams to pincture taken under the tongue. "It took me years to figure out the best delivery methods," Kincaid said. "I use a topical cream for neck pain at night. While on the go for intermediate relief, I use a vape pen, and because the effects are incredibly quick. At home, I use a tincture, and 24 hours prior to a big event, I take 100 to 150 milligrams throughout the day and 20 to 60 milligrams the morning of. People are coming to me because I look so healthy now," Kincaid marvels. "My wife takes CBD when her ulcerative colitis flares up. My mom was asked about CBD. I even gave my dog CBD when she had cancer. You could literally feel the heat dissipate from her tumor and see the wrinkles in her forehead relax after each dose." Kincaid stresses that it's important to find a trusted brand, since some products may be ineffective or even harmful. Also, CBD may interact with other medications, so talk to your doctor first and then proceed with caution. Start with just a few milligrams and increase gradually if needed. Stephanie Johnson, 47, home, Dallas, Texas. Occupation, Associate Content Director at Marketing, Branding, and Advertising Agency. Neopathic pain followed by treatment for triple-negative breast cancer. And there's a picture of her. She's a very attractive lady, short brown hair, big smile. Stephanie Johnson was diagnosed with advanced triple-negative breast cancer when she was 38. "I was given a 23% chance of living to see 5 years, and now it's more than 8 years," says Johnson. "I got to see my boys become men, and her sons, teens at the time, are now 22 and 25. After her diagnosis, Johnson endured a year of treatment that included 4 months of chemotherapy and 3 surgeries. But while the chemo drug, Taxol, helped eliminate the cancer, it left Johnson with painful nerve damage in her hands and feet. Johnson likes the sensation of being stabbed with a multitude of tiny ice picks. It's prickly and almost an electrical shock feeling," she says. "The feet will swell and get sore, too." Her condition, peripheral neuropathy, can also result from poorly controlled diabetes, autoimmune diseases, vitamin deficiencies, and viral infections, and many other factors. For about 18 months, Johnson tried treating her hands and feet with over-the-counter pain relievers and topical treatments. But she couldn't find relief. Pills she worried about potential side effects, such as organ damage. "I finally was like, you know what, I'll try this CBD stuff," she says. Johnson had become familiar with CBD through her job at a marketing agency in Dallas, where she researched and wrote content for clients, including CBD product makers, hemp farmers, and medical marijuana firms. In a 2019 study of 29 patients with peripheral neuropathy, published in the Journal of Current Pharmaceutical Biotechnology, researchers found oil containing 250 milligrams of CBD per 3 ounces significantly reduced intense sharp pain and cold and itchy sensations compensated with a placebo. Johnson felt the effects of CBD right away. I remember the first time I tried a topical on my feet, she said. I could feel the pain calming down and everything subsiding, and I looked at my husband and said, I feel good. This is great. She tried an array of CBD products before setting on a cream she uses when the pain flares up and an oil to ease achy legs at bedtime. When the COVID-19 stay-at-home orders kicked in, she began to experiment with making her own CBD oil infusions and gummy candies, a fun project to counteract the stress of temporarily being the sole breadwinner in her household. That's interesting. Apparently the husband is no longer in the picture. Interesting. Anyway, that's the end of that article. Money laundering. Have you ever accidentally run a dollar bill through the wash and been amazed that it survived? You can thank the Bureau of Engraving and Printing's Durability Lab, where scientists soak bills in chemicals, crumple them up, and throw them into a washing machine with detergent and a set of towels, all to make sure they could survive the indignities of countless cash transactions. Says chemist Joe Pichiarski about being surrounded by all that cash. It helps to think of it as monopoly money. The Genius section. Scammed. And there's a picture of three cards on a table, the famous three-card Monty. Even the most savvy among us can be duped. I learned that harsh lesson myself when an urgent and heartfelt plea arrived in my inbox by Bruce Gibson. The email popped up on my screen at 6:46 a.m. on December 24th last year. I'd already been awake for hours, working to deadline. It was from someone I know quite well, the minister of my Unitarian church. I need a favor from you, it read. Email me as soon as you get my message. Ahoy, Ron, I replied. A friend was in the hospital battling cancer, he said, and he just learned she was scheduled for surgery that night. Could I possibly pick up some iTunes gift cards? She needs the cards to download her favorite music and videos to boost her confidence on her next phase of surgery. He'd do it himself, but he was tied up, he explained. I will surely reimburse you as soon as I can. Okay, I emailed back. Thank you much for so much, Bruce, my correspondent replied. Then he got down to business. I was to buy 300 of iTunes credit. That's quite a lot of music, I thought. I need you to scratch the silver linings at the back of each card to reveal the redemption code. Then take a snapshot and send it directly to Sharon's email. He gave the address. God bless. God bless? We're Unitarians. Optimistic agnostics at best. The G word doesn't come up much. Totally weird sign off there. I assume Ron Mine was still on the dire circumstances of his friend Sharon. I can pick up the cards around noon and engineer that by this by tonight, I replied. That would be too late, he replied. Can you please send them to her by noon so she could be able to use them before her surgery? This was awkward timing. But hey, what was my slight inconvenience against the woman's cancer fight? On Christmas Eve, no less. I drove to the grocery store and purchased four gift cards. The clerk activated them at the register at 9:30. I emailed pictures with the following message. Dear Sharon, the codes on the cards below will buy you music via iTunes. Everybody is pulling for you. A busy Christmas Eve day then unfolded. I forgot all about this until around 4:30 p.m. when I checked my email. A follow-up message was in my inbox. Sharon just emailed me now saying that he got the cards. I want to really appreciate you for that. I'm sure it's going to go a long way in her flight over cancer. But now there was a new development, apparently word of the gift cards that made its way around the cancer ward. Other patients were asking Ron for the same thing. Could you please mail an additional 500 worth of iTunes gift cards right away? What? The personal friend was one thing, but random strangers on the ward? Anyway, it might be too late. I called Ron. Hey, Bruce, what's up? Are we too late to help those other patients, I asked. Silence, then. I don't know what you're talking about. Those other patients on the ward now also want music, I said. Bruce, a long beat. It's a scam. Somebody has been impersonating me. I put out a warning on Facebook. I didn't see that. How is that? I was played so easily. The answer is simple. Our brains are susceptible to well-crafted fiction. And the best scams are just that, says Vera Tobin, a cognitive science at Case Western Reserve University. The sympathies and attention of the victim are expertly manipulated by a narrative sleight of hand. The stakes start small. In my case, the initial contact was modest and believable. There were the shoe-shuffling apologies, thanks in advance. From there, the story unfolded. Next thing I knew, I was putting on my jacket, Scammers exploit thinking errors in the same way storytellers do. We are cognitive misers, says University of Toronto psychologist Keith Stanovich, making mental shortcuts and jumping to conclusions wherever possible. Scammers take advantage of other cognitive errors, too, such as consistency bias, which says people tend to act in accordance with who they believe themselves to be. When I received the first email, it spoke to my sense that I'm a nice guy. And here's what an opportunity to prove it. Here was an opportunity to prove it. You're on a goodwill mission, says the cop who dutifully took down my report, and that kind of puts blinders on you. There's anchoring, a term psychologists use to describe the act of relying too heavily on one piece of information. It's hard for people to set aside something they already know, says Tobin, and that constrains our ability to reason. The scammer had fixed in my mind the image of Cancer Ward, and to make matters worse, I could see Sharon in my mind because I had been there. I was at my father's bedside when he died of cancer. All three factors together may incline scam victims to overlook what should be glaring red flags. My minister didn't use my name in the first email. Then again, maybe he was in a hurry. So scammers don't use my name because he didn't have it. Until my response, I gave it to him. And a grammatical error from a person I knew to be fastidious with language? I chalked it up to stress. Basically, I read those emails through a filter that cleaned up the language and imputed only good motives. There's a widespread perception that scam victims are predominantly older folk. Actually, millennials are scammed more than any other group, according to Federal Trade Commission data. But they lose less money than seniors because they have less. The stereotype that the lonely are sitting ducks is true. Lonely people are more likely to let scammers get their foot in the door. They open unsolicited mail and stay on the line for those bogus IRS agents. I'm not lonely or millennial, but I was randomly chosen from a pool that is viewed as promising for scammers, a minister's congregation. There is evidence that con artists disproportionately target religious groups, although it's less clear whether people of faith are actually more susceptible to such schemes. And sure enough, I learned that no one else in my congregation had been fooled. The scammer was lucky to have found me. I'm gullible, as my wife likes to remind me. Remember the time you almost bought a car with a lien on it? There are other character traits we scam victims demonstrably share. We are decisive, okay, impulsive, naive, or trusting. Could also apply. Although social scientists prefer the descriptors unsuspicious, and we are risk takers, physically, financially, and emotionally, says psychologist Stephen Leah of the University of Exeter in England. You'd think ignorance would be a precondition to getting bilked, but sometimes the problem isn't knowing too little but too much. One of Bernie Madoff's victims was a psychiatrist named Stephen Greenspan, who lost about a third of his retirement savings to Madoff's Ponzi scheme. Just 2 days before he'd learned he'd been hoodwinked, Greenspan had published a long, authoritative tome called Animals of Gullibility, Why We Get Duped and How to Avoid It. Overconfidence, it turned out, can produce a kind of unwarranted swagger on almost comically abused misreading of events. I had actually been in the middle of editing some articles on how to avoid scams when the first email arrived. This should have made me able to smell a ruse at 50 paces. But there's the thing. While I had a solid general knowledge, I never encountered this particular scam. There was no Nigerian prince. It didn't even involve money directly. Why would crooks want music? The answer, they don't. The reason scammer asks for iTunes gift cards is simple. The codes are hard to trace, and once they have them, they can resell them. I'm afraid there's nothing we can do, said the agent from Visa's fraud department after hearing my story. Why not? Because it's not fraud, he said. When we dispute charges, our claim is against the merchant. But the merchant didn't do anything wrong here. You willingly purchased those gift certificates. Wait, what? I didn't willingly purchase them, or did I? What distinguishes fraud from all other crimes is that it demands cooperation from the victim, notes Leah. Card magician Wesley Lambs puts a finger on it this way. The dupe is always there to some extent. But what could possibly be the payoff in getting robbed? Maybe the answer is not so different from why we go to magic shows. It's weirdly pleasurable to suspend our disbelief and then to have the rug pulled out from under us. That aha moment, says Tobin, is something humans like a lot. The tension and relief after being expertly led into jeopardy something I've probably been missing on the flat sea of middle life, and of course, for a writer, drama of its own kind of payoff. What did I get out of the whole ordeal? I got a moment, a frisson of aliveness, a memory to distinguish the day from all others forever. At least, and not the least, a story. Can you believe it? Sweden's famous Isotil has a smoke detector. Now that's funny. The founder of Alcoholics Anonymous asked for whiskey on his deathbed. The nurse refused. Father of traffic safety, William Eno, invented the stop sign, speed limit, traffic circle, and one-way street, but never learned to drive. Okay, let's switch over to Consumer Reports. As Americans seek to limit the number of trips to the grocery store due to the coronavirus pandemic, they've been giving frozen meals a closer look. Along with filling their cupboards with long-lasting staples like canned beans, fish, and soup, consumers have been stocking up on frozen meals. Sales increased by 48% in April this year compared with the same month last year, according to the American Frozen Food Association. That coincides with a growing interest in packaged foods that have healthier, less processed ingredients, as well as a willingness to sample a wider variety of cuisine. Manufacturers of frozen meals have been hitting the reset button and changing a lot about their pocket offerings in order to meet consumers where they are, says Dewey Warner, senior food and nutrition analyst at Euromonitor International, a market research company. These kinds of meals are largely what's driving the growth in sales. Salisbury steak and potatoes may be a tough sell, but consumers may be interested in fire-grilled sriracha steak bowls, Warner adds. As a result, we decided to check out their newer offerings in the freezer case. There are still plenty of old-school dishes, lots of meat and potatoes, man dinners, and petite bland diet meals. But we found just as many that feature global flavors, plant proteins such as beans and tofu, and fewer processed ingredients. Consumers see frozen meals as an easy way to experiment with these trends, says Ellen Klontz, the CR nutritionist who oversaw our testing. So we opted to evaluate 30 meals that fit into these categories rather than classic frozen meals. Our food experts found plenty of choices that are healthy and much tastier than what you might have imagined. And while none of the meals on our test received our highest taste rating, 18 were rated very good, and here are the changes we noted. And by the way, there's a picture here of a combination of succotash and beans and carrots. Looks really good. More grains and fiber. Portion sizes for frozen meals in general were still pretty small. A total amount of food in the entrees we tested ranged from 1¾ to 2 cups, and a calorie count for this newer generation of frozen meals, turning the page, entrees are in some cases similar to those for old-style favorites. Stouffer Chicken a la King, for instance, has 360 calories, and Marie Callender's Chicken Parmesan has 440. What evolved virtualized grilled chicken with grains and vegetables in our rating has 410. The difference in the nutritional quality of the ingredients, the new breed of frozen dinners includes high fiber, whole grains, beans, vegetables, and even nuts and seeds. The vitalized grilled chicken, for example, has plentiful brown rice, lentils, and vegetables, and 8 grams of filling fiber. In fact, when we measured and weighed the amount of vegetables, legumes, and whole grains in the meals, we found that most of them had 1 to 1.5 cups of these healthy ingredients, and about half of the meals had 8 to 20 grams of fiber. Daily fiber needs range from 25 to 31 grams. In contrast, Stouffer's Chicken a la King is mostly white rice with chicken chunks and a cream sauce and has no fiber whatsoever. Fewer additives. A healthier frozen meal should have mostly whole food ingredients like quinoa, vegetables, legumes, lean beef, chicken, and seafood, says Nancy Farrow Allen, RDDN, a spokesperson for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. While technically speaking, frozen meals are processed foods, many of the ones on our ratings wouldn't be considered ultra-processed. Ultra-processed means the ingredients are far from their natural state. Think soy protein and isolate instead of tofu, Klotz said. They also tend to be loaded with added sugars, sodium, and ingredients that you wouldn't use at home, such as phosphates, flavorings, and gums. The distinction is important. Eating too many ultra-processed foods may raise the risk of obesity, heart disease, and other health problems. We took these factors into consideration in calculating our nutrition score, Klotz says. International flavors. American palates have become more adventurous, And in the offerings of the freezer can case like menus at an Asian, Indian, Mediterranean, and other international restaurants. Flavorful ingredients are the standard in global cuisine, such as serrano peppers, tahini, tamari, tomatillo, fenugreek, leaves, and turmeric are now regularly featured. The vegetable choices in the meals we tested were nicely varied, too, including butternut squash, chard, and sweet potatoes, in addition to tried and true carrots and broccoli. And while grains in the old style meals are limited to white rice or pasta, you can now find brown rice and other whole grains such as quinoa, red rice, farm or weather berries, and legume pasta. The plant-based trend is well represented in the frozen meal category, and meals made with wholly vegetables, whole grains, and beans tend to be score the highest in our ratings, especially in the vegetables were flavorful, that had a firm texture, with the seasoning tasted fresh, not dried, and were well blended. The meals with chicken were more likely to get lower taste scores. The meat was often dry and chewy, Claude says. Possibly this is because chicken's texture may be affected when it's processed and reheated. What's more, the best-tasting chicken dishes, Saffron Road Chicken Pad Thai with rice noodles and Good Food Made Simple Chicken Black Bean, scored only fair for nutrition. While frozen meals have traditionally been high in sodium, we found several lower sodium options. In many of the dishes, Claude said, the combination of ingredients and spices added so much flavor that you didn't need all the salt. A little something on the side. If the average frozen meal doesn't fill you up, try preparing one of these simple, satisfying accomplishments. Bulk up the dish. Microstop 2 cups of frozen cauliflower rice and mix into your frozen meal. Sprinkle a handful of nuts or seeds on top. Steam 1/2 cup of frozen shelled endomame or other frozen or fresh vegetables to add to your meal. Serve on the side. A side of 100% whole grain toast with 1 tablespoon of nut butter. A red bell pepper sliced with 1/4 cup of hummus. A microwaved sweet potato topped with cinnamon and nutmeg. Sliced tomato and fresh mozzarella. A green salad with sliced vegetables and nuts and seeds. A zucchini cut into rounds and microwaved, then sprinkled with olive oil, Parmesan cheese, and dried oregano. Okay, let's take a look. Oh, there's a picture here of a bird's eye steam fresh blends chickpea and spinach, which is, really looks good, and Healthy Choice Simply Steamers Mediterranean-style lentil bowl. A lot of veggies there. Okay, let's run through some of these and their ratings. And the ratings, the highest rating they have is 80, and it runs down. Amy's Light and Lean Quinoa and Black Beans with Butternut Squash got an 80. Performance Kitchen Southern Cal Kale and Bean. Koshi Plant Powered Bower Sweet Potato Quinoa. Healthy Choice Simply Steamed Unwrapped Burrito Bowl. Healthy Choice Simply Steamed Mediterranean Style Lentil Bowl. And Healthy Choice Power Bowls for Falafel and Tahini. Bird's Eye Steam Fresh Superfood Blends Chickpeas and Spinach. Amy's Bowls Harvest Casserole. Performance Kitchen Great Karma Coconut Curry. Kashi Plant Powered Bowl Chicknut Quinoa. Sweet Earth Curry Tiger. Performance Kitchen Mighty Maldo and Greens. Green Giant Harvest Portion Bowls. And Lean Cuisine Origins Coconut. And there's quite a few more, but those are all the top rated ones. Okay, this next article we probably won't finish, but there's a whole bunch of their individual sections, so I'll be able to stop at some point. And we can pick it up next week. Americans have been spending a lot more time at home lately, which means that all the little projects around the house you've been putting off aren't quite so easy to overlook anymore. Like that clogged shower head you were eventually going to fix, or the kitchen drawer so full of loose bacteria, batteries, tangled extension cords, twine, and other junk that you cringe every time you open it. The good news is that these and many other home maintenance matters are quick and simple to tackle on your own. Many don't even require a tool. They can also come with unexpected rewards. You'd be surprised how just putting a fresh coat of paint on your front door can help you enjoy your home more, says John Gustafano Galafiore, Associate Director of Product Testing at Consumer Reports. And you don't have to spend a lot of time or money to make many home improvements. To help you get started, we'll come up with 19 easy projects with big payoffs that you could do on your own. We've even organized them by category and length of time they may take to complete. How all you have to do is pick one and get off the couch. Tidy and organizing. Bring more order and neatness to heavily used spaces. Double your cabinet storage. Time required up to 30 minutes. Is the undersink cabinet in your bathroom or kitchen a jumble of cleaning products? Tension rods are made for hanging curtains, but you can also hang spray bottles from them, too. They had a one-pound foot. Mount a 7/8, 16th, or 18-inch diameter rod high in the cabinet, usually between the bar from the middle to the rubber ends to hold it steady, and hang bottles from their triggers. Always keep cleaning products in their original containers and use cabinet safety latches if children are even ever in your home. Declutter your drawers. Time required, up to 10 minutes. Bring order to your catch-all drawers with organizing trays. You seem to buy them in various shapes and configurations, online at places like Home Depot and Bed and Bath and Beyond. Measure your drawers first to ensure the proper fit and avoid mesh trays, which can shag paper clips and pencil tips. Maximize cupboard space. Time required, up to 30 minutes. Attach adhesive strip caddies from brands such as Command to the inside of cabinet doors to store frequently used lightweight products like toothbrushes in a bathroom, spices in a kitchen, or binder clips in a home office. These removable bins come in various sizes. Clear ones let you easily see what you're reaching for. Easy upgrades. These small home improvements can yield big rewards. Silence your toilet seat. Time required up to 30 minutes. Installing a toilet seat with a self-close hinge so that it can no longer bang down is an investment in serenity. It costs around $25 to $50 at home improvement stores and takes about 10 minutes to install. Look for one with a quick release feature, says John Gallifafori, with Overseas Consumer Reports Toilet Tests. These allow you to pull off the seat and lid when cleaning without removing the bolts. Well, that's interesting. Modernize your faucet. Time required up to a half a day. Installing a touchless faucet in your kitchen can eliminate the need to touch the kitchen faucet, reducing the risk of cross-contamination by germs, says James E. Rogers, Consumer Reports Director of Food Safety Research and Testing. Touchless faucets look like regular faucets, but they also have a motion sensor that turns the water on and off with a wave of a hand. You set the default water temperature with the manual handle of the faucet. They come in a variety of styles and finishes and cost around $200 more than a regular faucet, but one that's battery-powered unless you have an outlet under the sink. Give floors a facelift. Time required, up to a full day. Vinyl floor planks give the look of wood but resist stains and moisture and go directly over concrete, tile, hardwood, or other old flooring. Just put the planks down and snap them into place. They come in a variety of sizes and wood looks, such as Consumer Reports recommended pick Armstrong Pearson Elements of Heritage Vintage Multi, which resembles weathered born wood, or CR's Best Buy option, the Armstrong Vivero O10 Homespun Harmony Rugged Brown. Boy, the names are long enough, aren't they? Which is a wide plank. Get the thickest product you can, advises Joe Nakatori, who tests his flooring for CR. This thin vinyl can show indentations on the surface it's installed if it isn't perfectly level. Cleaning and maintenance. Keep appliances and other household items working better and longer. Refresh your refrigerator up to 30 minutes. Your refrigerator's condenser coils collect dust, dirt, and other debris that tax the compressor and could lead to a breakdown. To help prevent this, vacuum the coils every 6 months. Check the manual for the location they're using near the compressor beneath the refrigerator. Cleaning the door gaskets and surrounding surfaces with a mild cleaner and damp sponge from time to time will ensure a good seal, preventing cold air from escaping the refrigerator, which makes the compressor work harder. Another tip, keep your fridge humming along. Don't overpack the fridge or freezer, says Larry Kufo, Consumer Reports test engineer who evaluates refrigerators. Jamming items in can keep the doors from closing properly, which again makes the compressor work harder, and never place items where they block the vents along the back or side walls. Make your oven sparkle up to a half a day. Most of us have been eating out a lot less, which means our ovens are getting pretty gunked up. If your oven has a self-clean mode, take some precautions. Turn on the exhaust fan and open windows before starting. And remember, you can't use the cooktop during the 3 to 5 hours it takes for the oven to self-clean, says Tara Saragola, who oversees range testing for Consumer Reports. Never use a spray-on oven cleaner in an oven with a self-cleaning mode. Residue from it can damage the oven interior under high heat. For ovens without self-cleaning function, scrub with a non-abrasive cleaner and sponge. Make over the microwave. Time required, up to 30 minutes. A clean, grate-spilling microwave can be yours in three easy steps. 1. When the glass plate and the round rail it sits on and with warm, soapy water. 2. For over-the-range models, remove the mesh grease filters from underneath the microwave and run them through the dishwasher if the manual says you can't. Otherwise, soak them in soapy water and scrub them clean with a bristle brush. 3. Place a bowl of water with a quarter cup of lemon juice in the microwave and run it on high for 1 minute. Remove the bowl and wipe the inside of the oven. The condensation make it easier to get clean. Spruce up your washer and dryer. Time required, up to 2 hours. If the rubber water hoses in the back of your washer look brittle, swap them out for durable braided stainless steel versions that you can get from a home improvement store. These should be replaced about once every 5 years. To maintain the dryer, carefully pull the lint away from the unit away from the wall, disconnect the air duct to the back, and vacuum out lint out of the duct and the port. Then clean both with a brush, dryer duct, and vacuum again. Doing this once a year will help prevent a lint fire, says Don Huber, Director of Product Safety for Consumer Reports. If your dryer has an accordion-style vent, place it with a rigid, smooth metal one, but that's less prone to collecting lint. Clean your filters, up to 2 hours. It's always a good idea to clean the filter in your dishwasher and change the water filter in your refrigerator, if it has one. From time to time, with the heavy use these appliances are getting now, they should be cleaned more often. Larry Kufo, Test Dishwasher CR, recommends rinsing food debris out of a dishwasher's manual filter located on the bottom tube once a week instead of the usual once a month. You may also need to replace your refrigerator's water filter more often than once a month. Once every 6 months, as the manufacturers recommend. For window air conditioners, check the filters at least once a month and during periods of heavy use and clean as needed. And with that, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen next time, and it will be starting in October, because this is the end of September. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.